Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
We heard last week the shocking news that people with eating disorders here in Ireland are travelling abroad to seek crucial treatment. There are just three hospital beds for treatment of adults with eating disorders. The lack of beds available is truly shocking. In light of the following statistic, okay, an estimated 185,895 people in Ireland will experience an eating disorder in their lives. Tonight, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Johnny Hunt, who's on the media panel for Bodywise. They're the national voluntary organisation supporting people affected by eating disorders. Over 30 years ago, a bout of glandular fever triggered an eating disorder for Johnny. And thankfully, he has been in recovery now for just over 6 years. And he joins me to share his story. Johnny, good to talk to you. Oh, sorry, there, you're on that line there, Johnny. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I can't get over when you pair up the two statistics. There are only just three public hospital beds for treatment of adults with eating disorders, and nearly 200,000 people in Ireland will experience an eating disorder in their lives. Why such a huge issue in terms of three hospital beds versus 200,000 potential cases? Is it because eating disorders, is it because the disease or the illness is not being taken seriously by many?
I think it's because Ireland's healthcare system's a joke for lots of different reasons. Someone that's lived through an eating disorder, obviously I'm from England, you can tell by my accent, mm-hmm. but you know, I was over there when it started for me. It's a bigger growing problem. I was on with the Bodywise. We had a panel a couple of months ago with six younger people than me, and they're amazing. They're people that talked about their experience. Things are better, but they're not right. Things aren't still where they should be. It's one of those areas where they don't want to go. We just kind of brush it under the carpet and hope it goes away. Young people's mental health, like I'm an old dinosaur, I'm 52. My stuff happened 30 years ago, so that's my journey. And, you know, like you said, up to 5 years ago, I'm now comfortable talking about it. Mm. The next generations and the generations below, it needs to be an everyday conversation, like anything around mental health and stigma and everything else. And it's not. And people turn away from it. We all talk about, physical health and cancer and whatever else, and it's okay to talk about that because people go, oh, that's okay. But these things are still brushed under the carpet. It's a horrible thing to try and talk about.
There's still
for people that have been through these journeys, that it's real.
There's such a taboo around the condition, Johnny. If you take us back 30 years, you were 22. Mm. And as I mentioned there, a bout of glandular fever triggered this disorder in you. What happened at that time? You were getting over very bad infection. So where did the eating disorder come from?
If you speak to anyone, it's about control. Stuff happened, when I was a kid, in my growing up life. You don't know it at the time. And I think anyone that has been through the same journey, it's not about the eating part. It's never about eating. It's about taking control of elements of your life that you couldn't when you were younger. And I can only speak for my journey. I can't speak for everyone else's. But mm-hmm. So stuff happened when I was a kid. Parents got divorced back in the 1980s in England, and I was bullied, and things happened. And you get to a point and then you have a breakdown. So that's it, basically, as I call it. I had a mental breakdown when I was a student nurse. At the time, like it's 1992, it wasn't a conversation that you could have because there was things that were going on in England. So I don't know over here if you, there's a lady called Beverly Allett who was a nurse who went through lots of mental health stuff and horrible stuff that happened to children. That happened when I was a student nurse. So how could I speak up and say, I've got a mental health problem without the fear of losing my job and losing my career? And being male as well, as we go back to that whole thing of, you know, of being a man and talking about our mental health. And now, you know, you go 30 years forward to where we are now in life. It's a very scary thing. And but, like, has anything ever changed? I don't really know, like you say, about what services are available. And I know a lot of really good people, through Bodywise, young people that are very strong and very powerful young people. And I listened to them and I went, wow, things have changed so much, but there's still much more has to happen. And it's really scary.
You mentioned there, Johnny, that nursing is your profession. And it must be very, very difficult to have major mental health issues when you're seen as being the carer for other people.
Yeah, yeah. Like it, that if you can imagine, you know, you have your career, I have mine as a nurse and looking after other people. Oh, you're supposed to seem to be able to cope and to look after other people. And if you have something wrong with you, that's a really bad word to use, but that's what it would look like. Mm. Then how can you care for other people? But what it actually does is, when you've been rock bottom yourself and you've been that low and you've been that down, it makes you the best caring person and the best nurse, because you get it. You get what it's like to suffer, and you get what it's like to struggle, and you get what it's like to feel pain, and you reach out to other people. The sacrifices, it may still impact on your own mental health, but that's kind of why you go into the job. You know, I've been there 30 years now. It's an amazing thing to be able to help other people. But when you've been on your own journey, and like up to six years ago, where I started doing walks, I'm a Reading Football Club fan, my dream team. We did walks over in England from football clubs with Walk and Talk Men's Mental Health. We worked from Reading to Fulham to Bournemouth and did different things. And then we've brought it over here to Ireland with Bray Wanderers, and I'm an ambassador for Sea Change here in Ireland. It means the world to me to be able to make a change. So, like, I've got a 12-year-old and a 4-year-old. For my 12-year-old, when she's 18, it's talking about mental health is like, I want to buy a cup of coffee. There's no stigma around it. It's just normal conversation. And that's the thing that needs to change.
Yeah. Because one thing I always found fault with was how health departments put percentage figures on those people who might be depressed or might be anxious or whatever. How they managed to come up with these figures was just beyond me, because at the end of the day, everybody will face depression and anxiety at some stage in their lives. But can I ask you about your eating disorder? Because I know it doesn't all fall into one container. It's not all under the one umbrella. There are different reasons for it. There are different treatments that work. Some treatments don't work. What were the trigger signs for you? The triggers,
stress.
Was it stress? Yeah.
Like I know because I'm very mindful of other people's journeys, and I can't speak for other people, but for myself, you know, it's upbringing, it's family, it's different things. But what happens is, yeah, when you don't know what's happening to you, when you have stuff like that happened to me 30 years ago, it's like when you get older and wiser and you look back and you go, oh, okay, that makes sense now. So for me, as a 50-something person, if I can help the next generations and generations, generations, generations before that go, yeah, I can see what you're going through. And it's okay. It's okay to say I'm struggling. It's okay to say I have an eating disorder. It's okay to say I'm not mentally well. You know, I still go through my journeys. I still have the eating disorder person on my shoulder. And I, you know, certainly through COVID as a nurse, really, really tested that. You know, I had a newborn baby, and it was horrendous. It was a horrendous time in my life. So you learn. And so if you can't pass that information or that knowledge on or that understanding to someone else, it's really a sad world we live in.
Mm. And do you ever find yourself in situations where you're almost physically and emotionally taken back to that time?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually, the last couple of days, to be honest, because I find, I say it now as it is, because my mum, bless her, passed 6 months ago in England, and I've been dealing with healthcare systems over here through a counselling service and through a GP service. And the lack of understanding and support is absolutely mind-blowing. I'm good in myself, as in I know what I need to get. But the lack of understanding of that. So I'm okay with that because I can fight through it. But for somebody that's never been through it before, can get turned away and lost to the system. And who knows what happens. And that's really sad. And it's a horrible place for anyone that hasn't been through it before. I've been through it time again, and I'm okay with that because, you know, I'm an old git. But like for young people, yeah, that don't know where that goes, and if you've been pushed away and that's it, you bounce back. I don't think so sometimes for certain people, and this is, you know, for me, living in Ireland as a, you know, the healthcare system and working in it, it's so wrong and it's so sad that this keeps happening. And, you know, we talk about other things that are going on in, you know, we don't talk about mental health. We don't talk about suicide. We don't talk about, it's just brushed under the carpet. We don't talk about eating disorders. We don't talk about this. We don't talk about that because let's not go there. And that's really sad. Really is sad.
When did you first know, and what were you experiencing? What were you feeling when the eating disorder was slowly taking ownership of you?
I honestly didn't know, because at the time, like for a young kid, like, so if you can go back to, you know, being a 20-year-old person like me, as a, you know, played football, played cricket, I did all my sports stuff, and I was a student nurse and doing my thing. I had stuff happen, but I didn't think about it. And then all of a sudden, it's like running into a brick wall and you go bang, and all of a sudden, all the wheels fall off, and you have this control thing in your head that, and I won't talk about the behaviours because I don't do triggering stuff for other people, because that's not what we do. It's about, for me, as an experience. And I was like, wow, it was insane. It was horrible. And then, but like, you know, when you go through, when you're living on your own as a student, and then you have to go back home to your parent or your mum, as I did, bless her, I had to then hide behaviours. So, you know, you go from anorexia to bulimia and different things. But then there's a stubborn element that I was brought up with. So I kind of kept going, and then restarted my nursing training again. I got through nursing. I don't know how I got through nursing to become a qualified nurse. But then that whole stigma sticks with you because for 20-odd years, you're scared, you're petrified that if you say you've got something wrong with you, that you won't get a job and you'll get struck off. And because how can you look after other people if you've got something wrong with you? And that it may be a stupid fear that maybe people don't understand, but when you're in it, it's a real fear because, you know, that's my job.
Yeah, it's almost as though you feel as though you're a liability to yourself, and how can you care for other people if other people perceive or imagine that you can't care for yourself, which isn't this one of the strange anomalies about an eating disorder, is that part of you believes you're caring for yourself, even though the medical profession will say to you, you're not caring for yourself.
Yeah, it's a very personal journey, and I think that people don't understand that. People think it's selfish. People think it's just about food. It's not. It's about other stuff. And people need to be kind, and people need to understand that the people that are doing it are good people,
yeah,
and need to be supported and be respected, because they're going through a journey that no one else understands. Is in any mental health, physical journey, whatever you want to call it, it's personal to each of us. And that needs to be, you can't judge people for that. You can't just label it. You can't, it's about our lives, because the reason why I had an eating disorder is because of my life. The reason 400, 2,000, whatever people have, is because of their lives.
Mm.
You can't label it with everything else. But the problem is the lack of support and services for people out there that need it and need it soon. Not like me as an old person, but for the young people, because there seems to be now more and more stress and anxiety and all the different things that are going on because of the way life is here in Ireland as young people. They need to be supported and looked after, not brushed away and you know, pushed into a corner and go, oh, we can't deal with that. Wake up, deal with the problem and help.
Mm. And as someone who has been on this journey for many years, and you sound like you're coping remarkably well with all of the challenges. Does it go back from someone with your experience, when you look at the professionals, in inverted commas, who claim to be experts in this field, down through the years, perhaps not so much lately, because obviously with the likes of Bodywise, you're getting people coming on board who have personal experience, and that's the greatest support you can offer. But is that why it has been such... Is that why so many people have been failed for so long? Because the treatment wasn't the right treatment.
Absolutely, and it's ticking boxes. You know, it's about the human element. And I think, you know, I'd have a conversation with anyone. I don't have the answers. I don't know all the solutions, but I listen. And I think there's so many people out there that will listen and understand. I have a really good communication with so many people that have been through similar journeys, like I said to you about in the group that I was like, wow, you're all 30 years younger than me and you're getting support, but it's still not enough. And that's the thing. It's people resting on their laurels going, oh, we've done our job now. There's never an end to the job that you do for people. Mm. You have to keep evolving, keep changing and keep working and making things better. Like when I was a kid, bullying was a playground thing. Now bullying's a online thing. It's a thing. It's different worlds. It's you know. So we times need to move, but I think everyone sticks their head in the sand and go,
mm-hmm.
either from shame that they don't want to deal with it, or we don't know what to do. But just take ownership, and we can deal with these things if there's a communication, there's an open conversation around these things. I couldn't speak for years because of my living in your head. The worst thing you do when you have a mental health issue is you live in your head and you talk about it in your head for 30 years or 20 years, 10 years, and it's exhausting. But when you realize that actually I could actually make a difference and you talk about it to other people, it's actually kind of helps me, but it also helps so many other people. And I do that on online. I have a talking Royals thing for Reading fans. I'm singing my own praises, but if you don't put it out there, people don't know it's there, and that's the conversation, yeah, that needs to happen. See Change, they do that, but it's not about celebrities. It's not about famous people going about their story about being a bit depressed and blah 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 blah. It's about genuine, real people going, this is my journey.
Yeah.
And we're not in competition with each other. We're just genuine people going, this is my story. And you can guarantee that there's one person that will identify with that. Two people, five people, whatever it is.
Mm.
But what it is, it's real and it's heartfelt. And that's what we need to do. And it needs to go further and further and further.
The COVID lockdown had a profound effect on eating disorders, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know, for me as a nurse, you know, half on about being a nurse, but like if you can imagine, my newborn was beginning of that, and then you're dealing with all these situations, and there's obviously the whole anti-COVID facts and all that stuff and whatever else. That's people's opinions and that's people's choices. But when you live in it and you have to go in and you know, for me personally, for 6 weeks, I was working in a house where the kids were COVID positive, all the staff were, so we had to come in and deal with that. It was horrendous. It was the most horrendous experience in 30 years of nursing and dealing with an eating disorder and all the other stuff that I've had to deal with. It was frightening. But it makes you very resilient about who you are as a person, and being kind. There's only one thing you can do in life is be kind and do something for other people.
So well said.
This conversation, this is a conversation with you, which is lovely to have, because I have these conversations all the time. I don't know how to say it. It's the world's a horrible place sometimes, but if you can't just put something out there, I do social media. I put a nice positive thing out every morning just to say, I've done it since COVID. That's one thing. Just have a nice day. If somebody reads that and goes, have a nice day, it's a positive thing in the world of negligence and horrible and stuff. Who knows what will happen in the world tomorrow? So if we can't be kind, what else can we do? That's to me the biggest thing.
I think if you can find comfort in part of today, you can take that with you into tomorrow, rather than taking bad news that you've heard today into tomorrow. I think it's very important that you kind of reinforce, you empower yourself with something that makes you feel that you're in a good place.
And the world's a difficult, horrible place. So if you go, I get you and I understand you and I'm listening and I don't have the answers, but I'm here. If you spread that word, like from what you do in your job, from what I do in my job, and that word becomes a day-to-day conversation, we're not doing a bad thing, are we?
Very true. And can I ask you, when you look back on the really, really difficult times, do you feel a sense of empowerment? Do you feel that you've reached a place in your life where the strength that you've gathered and that the strength you've received from other people who've supported you, like, has that changed your life?
Oh, God, yeah. I think, you know, for me, like, I'm not going to preach because, like, you know, times are still struggles. I have life stuff that happens. It's about my mum. But what I have is partner, my two crazy kids, Reading Football Club.
In that order.
Apparently, if I said it, you know, offline, everybody Football Club first and wrestling first. But it's a community. It's people that are in the world to me. And all I can do is try my best. And that, you know, I think, you know, from my point of view to other people is, don't be so hard on yourself. Just be kind to yourself. You're doing your best. And there's other people that will listen and help you through whatever journey you're in, whether it's eating disorders, whether it's mental health. The system may not be great, but people are. And they will always listen. So always reach out to someone. And you're never alone. That's the really, really big thing I think I've learned in life.
Yeah, that's powerful advice. It really is. And I'm always conscious when I do this show, it's a time of day or a time of night when vulnerable people probably are at their most vulnerable. I'm sure there are many, many people out there who are on an off footing at the moment, and they're probably feeling very low. They're probably uncertain about tomorrow. They're probably wondering, what's the point? Like, you've come through this extraordinary journey, and I suppose, and I speak from my own experience, it's by no means over. We're always challenged. But if you were to give a bit of advice tonight, Johnny, just to somebody who's listening to you right now, and they're hanging on your every word, they're you know, ingesting the conversation because you describe it so well, what would you say?
Talk to me. I'm here. Yeah. You've got my... I'm on Twitter. I'm Hunty Royal. I'm Johnny Hunt, RoyalHunty1871 at hotmail.com. Talk to me. Don't be scared. Don't be afraid to reach out. I'll always listen. You'll always listen. We need to make that conversation an everyday conversation. And it's okay to say that. You need to break the stigma of... I saw Steve Timothy, the comedian guy. He was on the show yesterday about his stuff, and I follow him. We all have our journeys. We all fuck up. We all make things wrong. We all do things. We all have stuff that happens. Talk. Just talk. It's okay to talk. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to reach out. And when you're not able to reach out, listen, and someone can talk to you. And that's what we need. The platforms that you guys have on radio, TV, there needs to be more work around mental health. Like we did it with COVID, about all the cases of COVID. Well, why can't we talk about mental health every day on RTE1, on the news, on this, on that, and make it an everyday conversation? It's not a hush-hush conversation. And I think that's the biggest thing we need to change.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.